Some sannyasis said that we don't have to take Shastra literally. He shows the example that Ravana doesn't have 10 heads. Shastra tried to make a point that he was powerful. So when should we take Shastra literally and when do we not? Well, that's interesting, because I was just saying about how we may, some example of how we may not take Shastra literally, but generally we do. What's this? Who's this saying Ravana didn't have 10 heads and Shastra just tries to make a point that he was powerful? Who's saying that? That's not a Vaishnav sannyasi, or even a, not even a smarter would say that. I mean, not even a Mayavadi would say that. Everyone, Dasagriva, he has 10 heads. Dashagriva, actually. It's Dasha. Let's see. Converted to Hindi, it becomes Das. In Sanskrit, it means Dasha. So what do we take literally and what we don't? Well, we have to analyze and see. Some things in Shastra are clearly allegorical and they're stated to be, just like the story of Prachina Barhishat in the Bhagavatam. It's very clear that there's no pretense that it's anything but allegorical. Some statements, yeah, well, we require that to be explained to us by acharyas. Just like, well, I gave that example recently in Valsard, that even Krishna sometimes, he speaks nonsense, and it's right there in Shastra, right there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's expounding karma mimamsa philosophy. But we don't take that as Krishna's actual teachings. He did that. Not that he meant that to be his teachings, but to get a proper understanding from Nanda Maharaj. We find also Sukadeva Goswami, when Parikshit asks him, how can you get free from sin? From the tendency to sin, from the results of sinful life, then Sukadeva first answered, well, you do this prayaschitta. What's the English word for that? Prayaschitta? Atonement. Atonement, yeah. But it wasn't the correct answer. And Sukadeva knew it, but he wanted to test if Parikshit was properly understanding what he, Sukadeva, was saying. So, we have to understand Shastra through the teachings of the acharyas. Otherwise, it's impossible to understand. All of the different, what we can call, interpreters of Shastra have given a philosophical template through which to understand Shastra. Including the Mayavadis and the Kama Mimamsakas, all of them. But then what is the ultimate teaching that we have to see? Vyasadeva, in his maturity, compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. And there, in Bhagavatam, Krishna's too, Bhagavan Swayam, this is the Mool Sutra, that's the motto which runs through it all. That's the main teaching. So this has been pointed out for us by Jiva Goswami, and he makes a case, first of all, how, what is Vaishnav? What is Gaudiya epistemology? We have to accept the Vedas. But the Vedas are not very accessible in Kali Yuga because most of them are lost. And even most of the shakas of the Vedas are lost. So the essence of the Vedas is there. The Savedanta Saram Hi Saram Saram Hi Udaharitam. The essence of the Vedas is Srimad Bhagavatam. And in there he identifies the, Mool Sutra, Paribhasa Sutra, the defining motto is Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So based on that, he interprets or gives the clear understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. So based on the Acharya's teachings, which are based on proper understanding of Shastra, we understand Shastra. Some things are not to be taken literally. Mostly to be taken literally. Again, there are, of course, if we go to different Puranas, there are many statements. I mean, there are whole Puranas which, taken at face value, they show, well, Shiva Purana shows Shiva to be supreme. What to speak of the Puranas, we find in different parts of the Vedas, the Shruti, which is, that is considered the most authoritative, which shows Indra as supreme, Varuna as supreme. In different gods as supreme. So how to understand the Vedic message? Again, we have to see through the Acharyas. This Tarko Pratishta Shutiyo Vibhinna Na Savrishya Yasya Matang Nabhinnam Dharamasya Tatvam Nihitam Guhayam Mahajano Yenagata Sapanta. By discussion, there's no end to it. Someone says one thing, someone says something else. You'll never come to any conclusion. This, in the Western universities, they're very proud of their long tradition. It's not very long, it's just a few hundred years, but according to their understanding, it's a long time. Their long tradition of philosophy, and all the different ideas that have come up. But there's no end, there's no possibility of coming to any proper conclusion, because they have no basis, apratishtha. It's just based on what they see, think, hear, touch, feel and smell, and what they extrapolate out of that, with their limited intelligence. Of course, many of them are very intelligent, but it's wasted intelligence, because they have no basis on which to place their statements. Yesterday I was reading in the Veda base, it's actually from an interfaith discussion, how There was a discussion between, it was a report by a Christian who had attended an interfaith discussion with members of ISKCON. And some of the devotees, the subject was the nature of the soul. And the devotees were surprised that the Christians had no idea whatsoever. They had no clear idea. After 2,000 years, they have no clear idea of what the soul is. And the chief spokesman for the Christian camp spoke about the history of the philosophy of understanding what is the soul, and taking from Aristotle and Aquinas. And then one of the devotees present asked, well, why don't you just go to the Bible? Why do you go to all these people? And in that abstract, the reason why he didn't go to the Bible wasn't mentioned, but probably because the Bible doesn't give it. The reason would be that the Bible doesn't give any information. It's not a very philosophical book. Did you read at all parts of that? There's hardly any philosophy in there whatsoever in the Bible. Definitely with the nature of the soul is not discussed. So actually that was quite good, that interfaith call. I've been a critic of interfaith discussions, but that was pretty good because devotees respectfully met with the Christians and listened what they had to say. But it seems to me that the Christian who wrote this, who was impressed with the devotees overall, and the Christians in attendance, they were all like mostly from Oxford University and Harvard University. I mean, like the top of the Mletcher academics. So you know, they really didn't have much to say. They just had a bunch of speculations, whereas the devotees had a, you know, they had a clear, cogent philosophy and an understanding, whereas the Christian, like 2,000 years, the most basic thing is the first thing taught in Bhagavad Gita. They don't have a clue. They don't have any idea. The thing that I was taught when I was a kid was that, and that standard Christian philosophy up to the present day, is that the body is the soul. That's why they bury the bodies. I guess they don't think that the bodies get eaten by worms or whatever. But the idea is when Jesus comes, then he'll bring your body back to life. Sorry, it's just not very satisfying at all. So they don't have any clear idea. So tarka apratishta. Shrutiyo vibhinna. Now, it is stated here that the shrutis are different. Actually, the shrutis are not different. But they may appear... Well, there is talk of the Bheda shrutis and Abheda shrutis. Those shrutis that... Those parts of the Vedas that appear to establish... This means especially referring to the Upanishadic statements, some of which appear to support non-difference of everything. They're just non-difference. Nothing is different from anything else. And those that support difference, particularly between the supreme and the non-supreme. Of course, Madhva doesn't accept that at all. That there's any... All the... and the Shruti itself states... was it Sarve Veda Yad Padama Mananti? All the Vedas, they speak of one thing. Or they praise that particular Padam, that particular position. But it may appear, this is after all this statement is made by Yudhishthira to the Yaksha, who is Yamaraj. So the Shrutis, they may appear to be different. What to speak of the Smriti, the Puranas. And na savrishya yasya matang na bhinnam. And to add to all this confusion, you have all these different speculators with all their different ideas. So, how to find out the actual fact? What is the actual fact of dharma? What is the essence? To understand that, well, that's hidden in the... That is in the heart of a great personality. So one has to follow the great personalities. And then the question will come, who's a great personality? And it depends on who you follow. Someone will say, I don't follow anyone. Then they follow their own mind. And as the saying goes, one who has himself as his own guru has a fool for a disciple. So we need guidance to get out of this situation. How will we get that guidance? ultimately we shall have to pray. Please guide me. You who are there, whoever you may be, please guide me so that I can come out of this confusion. So, what's the point? How do we understand Shastra? We understand Shastra through those who understand Shastra. When do we have to take it literally and when do we not? According to the direction of the Acharyas, there may be some points in which there's no direct statement in Shastra, just like there's this stem cell research is a moral question coming up at the proper time. So Shastra doesn't deal with that. So what do we do in such a case? This isn't off the point a bit from taking Shastra literally or not. What do we do in such a case? And then we have to study the... If we don't find an Acharya whose guidance we can accept as definitive on this point, or if there's no such great Acharya present in the world at the present time, just like Prabhupada was here, we could ask him and we would accept what he says as definitive, but we don't find any person in the world at that time of the same, at the present time, of the same stature. And devotees of that stature are not very common in the world. So in such a situation, what do we do? Then our devotees may discuss on the basis of Shastra, on the spirit of Shastra, and come up with some and give guidance. It's the duty of those who are leaders of Vaishnava society, like sannyasis. Someone has to give guidance and leadership, isn't it? That question just came up about should there be sannyasis? Yeah, someone has to give guidance and leadership. Sannyasis are not just meant for, you know, like Hindu priests taking donations and eating meals and giving blessings, but they're meant to give guidance by their, and to set an example by their behavior and in devotional service, and to give philosophical and practical guidance. So you may find on some points different spiritual leaders within the same tradition, they give different guidance, and then what to do? Then you have to choose yourself. Ultimately, it may come down to yourself. And then we shall have to see. Some points are maybe very difficult to ascertain. We shall have to see means at the time of death, we shall understand, at the latest, if what we have done is right or not. Does this mean that Shastra doesn't cover every situation? Yes, that's right. It's not possible that for Shastra to cover the every situation. There's the nature of life in this world is so complex, it's not possible that Shastra can cover every situation. But it does give a wide body of knowledge and examples. There are rules in Shastra, and there are also so many stories. The stories are not just meant for entertainment, but they're meant to show us how the rules of Shastra are to be followed, what happens if you don't follow them properly, how even some major rules under certain circumstances can and should be broken. Just like, for instance, Bali Maharaj defied his guru. You accept a guru to follow him, but under certain circumstances, gurur api avaliptasya karya karya na janataha. Utpanna pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. Even if one's guru, who is one is very fond of, who has helped one so much, but if he's fallen, if he's not giving proper guidance, if he's hopelessly fallen, if he's not giving proper guidance, then he should be fully rejected. So that example is there, Bali Maharaj. So Shastra and persons who know, there should be a class of people who are trained from a young age in understanding Shastra and having good knowledge of Shastra, which they can bring to bear on any given situation and give advice. And that's why we also need gurus. In one sense, you could say a guru is like a specialist. You could say, well, what do you need a guru for? You can just read Prabhupada's books. You can do that. And have a guru like that. But Shastra says, pariprashnena, one should inquire. So it's not possible for everyone to study deeply, to reflect deeply, or to have the purity required to understand all the fine points in Shastra and how to apply them. Therefore, there's a class of specialists. Just like, you know, if you cut your finger, then you wipe it, put on some antiseptic and a little band-aid, and okay, you don't need a doctor. Or in traditional society, you'd put some turmeric powder, something like that, and put some cloth around it. Nowadays, it's Dettol and band-aid. Otherwise, it's haldi and some cloth. But if your finger is cut so badly that it's dangling off, you better go and see a doctor, a specialist who's studied all these points, and he knows what he can. Maybe if you get to him quick enough, he can maybe get you to a surgeon who can sew it up and put it back on again, and so that it can grow back again. You're stepping over all the bhoga, which is going to be offered to Krishna. It's probably been stepped over in the bazaar already, but that doesn't mean you should step over it some more. Thank you for closing the window. So like that, it's required. There are a class of Brahmins who study Shastra very deeply and who perform sadhana very meticulously, so they have the purity to internalize that knowledge, and then they share it with others. So just like a doctor studies, and then he uses that knowledge for the benefit of others. So Brahmins are supposed to study Shastra deeply, lead a very pure life, and share that knowledge with others for the benefit of others. So how to understand Shastra? It may not be very easy in every circumstance. But anyway, Ravana has had 10 heads. You know, that's just, from anyone who's in Vedic culture to think otherwise, it's just absurd. Of course, the modern materialists would think it's absurd that anyone could have 10 heads. But for anyone in Vedic culture to propose that Ravana didn't really have 10 heads, you're just making the point that he's powerful. That is considered absurd. So as Srila Prabhupada often said, the modern society is very much in need of people who can study Shastra deeply and give that knowledge to others, and to help others come to Krishna consciousness, having come to come up in Krishna consciousness, having come up in Krishna consciousness to stay up in Krishna consciousness. So that is very much needed. The whole world is full of Shudras. This whole area we're living in is full of highly paid Shudras. All these IT professionals. And even if they're inclined to, I mean, many of them come from families, a lot of them from Brahmin families, who by culture, they want to be somewhat pious, but part of the training in Bangalore and other cities in the IT industry, as they call it, although there's no industry, used to mean producing something, but nowadays they say tourism industry, you know. You don't produce anything except a bunch of plastic cups littering the beach. It's part of it's almost demanded in the IT industry that you have to go to parties, you have to drink alcohol, you have to be a damn idiot, a complete Shudra. So these people could be using their brains and their culture to become spiritual leaders of society, which is why I'm saying to you also, finish your business and get out of this and get back to what you were doing before, for your own good and for the good of others. Better. Of course, you're living among others who will tell you, no, don't do that, it's too risky, this, that. You can preach as a householder, but practically speaking, we see householder devotees, yes, many of them are doing good preaching, but most of their time goes in work and social affairs and looking after the family and all that. It's laudable that they're doing preaching in the time that they have, but they also, they won't have the time to go very deeply into Shastra. Which is why you find some of the preachers in our movement who are like very good in preaching, but they don't know Shastra, and therefore what they're preaching doesn't have much depth. And then what they communicate, they communicate a very light version of Krishna consciousness. And everyone's happy with that, but you don't go very far with that. Okay, Hare Krishna. Finished for now.